Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody. That's me.
And in the studio together, forever, maybe, Mr. Brian Brushwood and Justin Robert Young. I mean, you guys could die there.
Who knows? Will they, won't they?
Will he, won't he commit kidnapping?
You know, Justin, it's lonely around here, and... I've decided for us both.
Yeah.
Locks the door.
Exactly. I mean, I am staying at his compound where he does control the locks, so this is not infeasible.
Speaking of which, I think you left the door unlocked on your way out today.
Well, I know that the construction guys have been coming in.
Got it. Okay, all right. Yeah. So good. As long as that was a known issue.
Construction guys? What construction guys?
Yeah.
There hasn't been construction on that property for 50 years.
All right, so I'm staying in Brian's compound, which at one point will be...
That doesn't sound good to begin with.
I'm just going to say, at one point it will be a gleaming, shining compound that the internet will know and revere, and there'll be a tremendous worth in me talking about how I was the earliest multiple night guest, and I'll feel very good about myself. For right now, it is an increasingly complicated, abandoned house that looks ever more dangerous and complicated, up to and including the fact that last night I show up, and because they are building a warehouse on the property, I come back in, and the place where I had left, or I'd previously been working on my laptop, it had been like my own little desk in this large studio area, now just had a bandsaw. So it was just a handsaw, not a bandsaw, just a gigantic handsaw, and also there was a plug that had been running in from the outdoors.
Yeah.
That made me like not know whether or not people were there. So now,
oh, no. So now you have to sweep the house.
So now I'm like, hello, hello. It's like, this is how people get murdered. Like this is exactly, I'm doing everything as I'm turning on my phone light to light the way.
I've only stayed the night there like two or three times. And each time, like it is spooky enough. It's going to take a while to get over that hump and make it feel like a safe, nice home to be in.
Lights would help.
Yeah. Also, windows that are broken replaced. Because, and also, like, it's got those old plate glass windows, like, not tempered glass, not safe in any way. And it's like when you move too fast, it changes the air pressure in the room just enough that this precariously balanced windowsill goes. And so in the middle of the night, you're sleeping perfectly still, and then you hear. And you're like, that's what would happen if the door just fucking opened. Oops,
yes.
Sorry.
Yeah.
A quick Google News search of the top entries for the word compound.
Yeah.
Okay. Number one, Mark Zuckerberg wants to build a massive compound in Lake Tahoe.
Okay.
Let's go next one. New compound of New Mexico jihadi cultists found in Alabama. Okay.
Okay. All right.
Not a good compound. Actor Kristen Davis looks to sell her leafy Brentwood compound. A good compound.
That's good. That's
good
a good compound.
Yep. Number one. Right. That's one for good guys. Good compound.
Maybe not so good.
Oh.
This remote compound in Sierra Nevada looks like a good one. A military compound in South Korea. And the last one, Israel hits Hamas compound.
Yeah. We're betting. That's a little above. That's a sub 500 record on compound.
I mean, look, I that's why we're trying to we're taking compound back, man.
It's our word now.
Yeah.
I was a guest at Brian's compound. It sounds a lot like I was at rehabilitation training at Scientology at their compound.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're saying we might need a little PR sprinkle of passive paint on there, huh?
No, actually the opposite. I'm saying I think you need to talk to a tax lawyer because I think we found a new angle.
that's yeah, a good exactly. point.
Actually, how many more tax credits do I get for compounds?
How hard would it be to make it a religion? the diamond
club. This is how it happens. It's literally happening right now.
Gentlemen, we just mentioned this right before the show. Today was the IPO for Beyond Meat. Mm-hmm. Beyond Meat is the meat substitute company, and they had an amazing IPO. They went up 135%, and they make a number of these meat substitutes that are pretty good. And you also have Beyond Meat's one company, and then you also have, I believe it's
Impossible Foods.
Another rival, right?
Yeah. So those are the two that have really gone the most mainstream. Beyond Meat, you can now get a Beyond Meat burger at Carl's Jr. And Impossible Foods recently partnered with Burger King to do a test run of the Impossible Whopper at, I think it was St. Louis. And now there was an announcement this week, probably to kind of get in on this IPO, this Beyond Meat IPO hype, that that Burger King is going to go nationwide with the Impossible Whopper. So you're going to be able to get a fully non-meat or vegan, vegetarian experience at your local Burger King soon.
What is the nuts and bolts? Because I know that the spectrum ranges from, cultured actual meats where you grow ground beef cells or you could do all the soy substitutes or whatever.
Yeah, like, so this is not cloning or anything like that. This is actual meat substitute stuff. So this is all the soy. I forget exactly what is in the Impossible Burger,
but
the Impossible Burger got famous because it was a patty that when you threw it on the grill, it would bleed. Like it would have a red thing, and they had like some beef element
to
it.
Heme is everybody. Yep. When you cut open a steak, you think of it as blood, but it's not. That's actually heme, and it turns out that they were able to synthesize heme from some plant or other, so it you get that bloody, tasty taste.
And I'll say this: Impossible Burger just did their second. I eat a lot of these, by the way, because my wife's vegan, so I'm very familiar with this level of cuisine. I would say Impossible Burger is very much a step up from somebody who also eats beef from the Beyond Meat Burger, but the new version of the Impossible Burger, which they actually debuted at CES because they wanted to brand it as like food tech. Kind of just tastes like a okay burger. It's not the best burger, but it certainly tastes like something that you would have at a Burger King. I think it's going to play really, really well with the Whopper crowd because it just sort of tastes like a pre-made patty of beef. It's pretty impressive.
Let me give a little bit of background on why there's a push to this, besides from the fact that there are people that are looking for meat alternatives, but we still, for some reason, we want these alternatives, but our bodies love the taste of meat, which maybe it's telling us something. There is, if you look at the environmental impact on raising cattle, raising beef, and agriculture in general, there's impact from having large fields, things like this too, but agriculture, when particularly cattle, uses an intense amount of water. It produces a lot of methane, a lot of transportation is involved. It's an area that if you can make it much more efficient would be wonderful, would have a lower impact. You could start using certain lands for other purposes, et cetera. And there's a drive right now. We're seeing the first sort of good wave of substitutes that are these plant-based ones. There's the next wave, which Brian pointed out, are going to be the ones where they're actually going to use cellular material from animals to grow steaks, grow things. And that's been something they're working on in the lab. But right now the plant-based ones are coming along pretty well. And in theory, you keep driving this technology, the costs get lower and lower and lower and lower, and we'll probably reach a point maybe in the next few years where we're going to see an acceleration of the lowering of this cost faster than regular meat, things like this. So my question is, are we going to see 2019, are we going to see maybe in the next 4 or 5 years where this might become the norm?
I mean, that's certainly what Asimov predicted in Caves of Steel. I think they were saying that everything was made of yeast, and there were people who were like, hey, last year, remember when we got a bumper crop of strawberries? Psych, yeah. That was actually all yeast. I think instead of the norm, I think in 5 years we can hope for cost parity in certain commodities like ground beef. I think in another 5 years after that, 10 years, we're looking for like that becomes the cheaper alternative. at which point then it becomes more of a runaway success. Assuming I'm assuming all of this is lower environmental impact as well, because we get closer to whether it be cap and trade or whatever kind of real enforcement of climate, CO2 emissions, it's going to be way more attractive to make this the default option, which will set up a weird moment where it's like, how do you justify continuing to eat meat? I mean, you at that point, eating real meat until, and we're talking not cloned whatevers, but eating real meat suddenly becomes a luxury that you can only justify based on taste, because you can't justify like, oh, I wish I could afford an Impossible Burger and a clean conscience, but I can't.
So it becomes more like veal or foie gras or something like that, where it is more expensive and it comes with some kind of moral question that you have to ask yourself.
Yeah, and I think it'll be another 5 years after that. So five years.
Because even to meat eaters, there's a question with certain like foie gras and veal or something like that. Even though we have all made peace with like, okay, factory farming is a thing, and there are animals that are raised to be slaughtered. That's fine. This is like the way civilization has run. But then it's like, oh, but a little baby veal, like that brings another question mark in foie gras. Similarly, so you know, you're saying that just like that stigma then grows out.
Yeah, I think. Okay, so 5 years out, I think we hit price parity. 10 years out, I think we it all of a sudden the default option becomes unleaded versus premium. And then 15 years is where people start saying, "Yeah, I know I should have the Impossible Burger, but oh my god, it's just so good! I want that real beef." And then once the lab grown meat 20 years from now starts becoming an option, then it's like then we hit a burger is a, what we consider the default traditional burger becomes a foie gras question.
I mean, here's what I will say with the Impossible Foods burger and Beyond Meat and Beyond Sausage. There are a few things for which we're getting close to, if this were the cheaper option, you could sell them in mass quantities. That is anything with ground beef,
right?
And anything with sausage. And I would say even with the Impossible Foods, you can really actually crumble that up, and it does do very well as like a pulled pork kind of thing.
I mean,
like there are a few of those. If it's highly seasoned and we don't have an expectation as to mouthfeel like we do with a steak or something like that,
yep,
or even a burger, if it's just filling, I'll tell you, you can throw some of that Impossible. And I hate this in the vegan and like meat substitute community. People are like, oh, it's exactly the same. It ain't. Even the Impossible Burger is not, right? Now, there's good, there's passable, but when it comes to ground beef or sausage, we're not far away from it being
indistinguishable. Which brings us to the real question, to bring it to Andrew's wheelhouse. If tomorrow Taco Bell started offering the Impossible Soft Taco, would that, and let's say the price was the same, I guess we would also have to speculate on how good it tastes. But like would I love the idea, because it's there's a lot of filler in that spiced beef anyway.
I think the advantages over these meats is that in theory it's going to be healthier, right?
Yeah.
I Brian, your timeline may be accurate. I mean, I don't know. I think it may be more aggressive, because I think once we get a couple more players in the market, and I've been listening to these, audiobooks and stuff talking about like price to where you want it to be, not what it costs right now, like what they did with the first like silicon, the microchips, things like this. If you get a big well-backed fund, company that says, we're selling, 100 million pounds a year, we can put our price at half that of ground beef. Let's just go ahead and start selling it at that price now and take over the market. It could be very aggressive. I could see really sooner than later that you go to a burger place and it is the norm that it's non-meat, but you can, the premium fancier burgers are the real meat ones or whatever. But if you ask if Taco Bell replaced it, sure.
And also, this isn't just necessarily a restaurant issue, because I don't believe Beyond Meat has at least their full range of products out in grocery stores. Impossible Foods definitely does not have their any of their products out in grocery stores. And that's even in the like Whole Foods Wait, okay, yeah, I guess Beyond Meat does have their burger there, but Impossible Foods does not. And that's a whole nother element of, you know, now all of a sudden, if a kid wants to go vegetarian, it's not the end of the world. If the family wants to start eating healthier, it's not the end of the world. You're still grilling burgers. They're still out there. Like, and you could even throw cheese on it if you want. And it's like, okay, well, still I'm not strictly, because that's actually what Impossible Foods did with the Impossible Burger. They did not market it as a vegan thing.
Yes, which I think is the brilliant move on their part.
They marketed it as a health thing that they went to and partnered with all these specific restaurants that were all cooking it their own specific way.
Mm-hmm.
And now that has expanded to like Burger King.
So what do you think? I'm sure that the cattle industry is not yet shaking in their boots, but 5 years, 10 years, they may be. But we're already starting to see.
I mean, the dairy industry is like they're currently fighting for like what milk means.
And that's exactly what I wanted to bring up, because we've already seen this battle where they moved to legislation to prevent anyone from calling it almond milk or soy milk or rice milk, and which is insane. They're like, no, milk is a thing that comes out of a cow's udder. It's like, well, no, milk is you know, white tasty stuff you put in your cereal, and it's like, why don't we call your product cow juice from now on? And we're gonna get the
nut juice and cow juice.
Right, exactly. But we're already like,
none of y'all deserve milk. Until you can settle it, boys, you're both juice.
Which, it kind of breaks my heart, because you're seeing product names change, you know, to like Silk, because it sounds kind of like soy milk. I forget what it was. Like, there's one faction that wants to call it clean meat. And this is specifically about lab-grown meat. There are some people that said, no, you're not allowed to call it meat. You got to call it like, I don't know, cell slop made in a dish. and
rolls right off the tongue.
Yeah, I mean, that's not. But my point is we're going to find this weird branding argument, and there's legal hammers being used on all this.
Now, yeah, somebody pointed out like what's happened. I was at Whole Foods with my buddy Peter, and he's talking about the whole milk thing. Like, he's like, oh yeah, they won the lawsuit. I'm like, are you sure? He's like, oh, I don't know if they actually did or whatever. But we walked into the dairy aisle, and what I thought was soy milk was soy milk. They had combined the letters from every, like, all the brands now was, instead of almond milk, it's almond milk.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. So technically, they're not calling it milk; they're calling it soy milk. Yeah. Interesting.
I think it's a dumb battle for the dairy industry to do that, because it's like, you know, like, there's a lot of precedent for other things that, you know, milk of magnesia, all this sort of stuff. Great. You won this. Now what? So that's cool. Like, we just saw federal court rules that almond milk is milk. And so that it looks like it was a proactive, let's change the names just to be careful. But, you know, I'm like, yeah, you're going to get, is that the battle they want to fight? And it will be, because they have a ton of money. They have a ton of litigators. They'll be like, hey, let's go try to do this. Let's try to, you know, come up with a new, let's change the names, 'cause that'll stop it, you know, which is dumb.
That is an understandable move. I'm not going to say it's a good one or a sensible one even, but it's an understandable move for the dominant player to make. Like, when you've got the money, the resources, And
talk about an industry trying to protect itself. Have you guys heard of the Great Beer Alliance that wasn't?
No.
So there was set to be, negotiations were well underway for all the major beer players to launch a massive Got Milk style campaign extolling the virtues of beer. Because beer has fallen so far over the last decade to wine and spirits, that beer is looked at as unhealthy, and that the market has kind of stratted so much.
So many carbs.
Yeah, they are facing a crisis in terms, especially going forward with the trends of younger, you know, people that are now becoming drinking age. And then it all fell to crap because Bud Light decided to pick their corn, you know, their
really?
Late. Yeah, that was the moment in which, I guess, Miller Coors said, like, well, we can't deal with these people. They're demonizing the very elements of beer. And so it all fell apart. But there was a moment in which they were going to all unite together and just talk about how rad beer was.
For the record, that was a pretty nasty trick and continues to be an awful distortion of in marketing. Like that seems like an out of bounds play. So for the uninitiated, Bud Light says they use corn syrup over at Miller Lite, so therefore it must be bad because we all have heard that corn syrup is bad. But they're talking about what sugars they feed the yeast. And so I guess at most you could imply that the yeast got fat and had unhealthy lives before they died, squeezing out the exact same ethanol used in their beer. It's awful science.
I would have expected so much more from the wackety schmackety medieval players that decided to levy such a charge.
But it was an out of nowhere.
Oh, it was a sideswipe. It was a multi-phase because they had previously made this big deal about how, oh, we have a label. We have an ingredients label. Everyone should have everything has an ingredients label. We're proactively putting an ingredients label. And then at the biggest possible visibility point, they decided to say, oh, here's an ingredient that's in their thing that they're not telling you about. You can always see what's in a can of Bud Light. It was dirty, but they basically, I guess, at the point that they all knew that they were at a crisis point, decided to be like, yeah, no, and it's only us. Ship.
It's
wild card.
They really committed to this whole Game of Thrones aesthetic.
They were, yeah. They beer weddinged the entire thing.
Well, as far as what's going to happen in reaction to this, like, if certainly, you know, the, you know, meat groups, whatever, are going to we're going to see pushback. Then, you know, you kind of got to look at who owns them, whatever, and what happens there. You know, a lot of the, you know, the meat industry is really, you know, we mentioned, you know, corn syrup before. It's corn based. What are the corn producers? You know, are the corn producers involved in this cycle or not? You know, that underlies so much of our economy. So,
There was that documentary King Corn was interesting. And what I respected about that documentary was that it started off looking like a hit piece, but ended with the real question of like, well, what do we do? Go back to before subsidies where we were paying people to not grow food? I mean, that's insane. And so, it's all a thorny, interconnected issue.
So to the meat substitute thing, Andrew, you would suspect, because you made mention earlier that this really heightens up as soon as we get more players in there. You would suspect that a gigantic IPO from Beyond Meat, and then surely what will follow is another even larger IPO from Impossible Foods, with the promise of rolling out to every grocery store. That accelerates that process. This is officially no longer speculative play. This is a land rush to see how many people can get in. Right.
I think they've already won mindshare. Yeah. I mean, everybody I know has tried this, and we've had them, and they're like, they're good enough. They're not like, you know, the garbage patties that we had from 10 years ago or whatever. They're like that, you know, that we got lie. Oh, try this. You know, there's stuff that you go like you could eat, like, you know, some of these, like the bean burgers. We're like, ah, it's okay. But yeah, it's not a burger. It's just a totally different thing. It's like, now they're getting a lot better. And I've had them and I'm like, ah, it's good enough. You know, some onions and stuff and all this will taste as good as something else. And it's improving. I think that mindshare's won. I think that mindshare's won. I don't think that we're revulsed by the idea. And I think that, yeah, if you get some players in there that say, let's drive this cost down. And that is the goal, to put the cost below meat, because because, you know, some, oh no, they want to make it this sort of, it's why lower the price right now? They're getting so much more because they want to sell 1,000 times as much.
Yeah.
And I think we will see the fake meat wars are about to begin.
I mean, they're already.
And Brian's already the first casualty.
Exactly. Oh no. Oh jeez. Well, I'll tell you what, you don't have to be a casualty of your own ignorance if you head over to patreon.com/weirdthings. That is where you can support this very show. Folks, I'm working while I'm on vacation right now. Me and Andrew are both out of the country by the time that you are listening to this. And yet we are here entertaining you. That's the kind of hustle that you can expect when you are a patron at patreon.com/weirdthings. Head on over there right now. Thank you to everybody who has already, and thank you to all those who will going forward.
So just do a really quick post hot take on the whole fake meat thing. I watched a really good speech by Steve Jurvetson, who's been an investor in a lot of this stuff, SpaceX, everything, big on the whole meat substitutes, all that. And he talked about how during the days of slavery, slave owners and would avoid going to the ports when the slave ships came in because they did not want to see the ships and the conditions of the horrific environment in which brought people to there. And they just wanted to think like, here are more prisoners with jobs.
Yes.
You know, and his corollary is that like now, like, you know, we eat meat, we like meat, but I don't really need to visit an abattoir. I don't really need to know how that works. And that we may eventually get to the point with really good substitutes that several decades now, like, yeah, nah, that eating meat's not, doesn't make so much sense now. And it's kind of like, cows are for petting zoos.
Yeah. It's interesting when you think in terms of, there's these, counterintuitive moments you realize where it's like, once we have this renaissance, then that means there'll be so much fewer cows. Like we're going to let the cows die off and we're going to refuse to let them breed so that fewer and fewer of them, and those that do will die in the wild or whatever. But then the flip side was, I remember somebody posted a picture of a bunch of venison they were cutting up, and he says, oh, I love deer meat because it's all natural and cruelty free. And which you would think, like, cruelty free, it's like, a fully mature deer is going to die eventually, probably of, you know, disease, infection, and all that stuff. This way, he just lived his life having a rad time and then just went to sleep instantly. Like,
so is he just, like, euthanizing deer in the woods?
Well,
like,
I mean, by shooting them and taking them out. But that is an objectively less cruel way for a deer to live than factory farming with cows. I mean, which one of those lives would you rather have?
I mean, I don't know. To me, they're kind of splitting hairs. But I can see where you're going. Like, yeah. I can definitely pick up what you're putting down. But I don't know. I mean, look, I've just made peace with the idea, specifically considering like I've been around a lot of the very specific literature and arguments for a vegan lifestyle. I'm just like, no, look, I'm a killer, baby. This is what I do.
I that argument about like, yeah, the deer, like, makes sense, but then you think about it, like, what do we really know? Are the deer like is man's in the forest? Man's in the forest, and they're like, oh no, let's run, we gotta hide. Okay, I'm hiding. Just be very, very still. And they're like, oh, look at that peaceful deer. He's like, oh my god, I'm gonna die. You know? God, it hit. I can't move, but I'm alive. Oh my god, they're slicing open my stomach.
Tell my wife, tell my children. Yeah. Oh god. There's so much I wanted to do.
Cruelty free.
Bambi 2 is really weird, you guys.
Yeah.
Did you say Deer Me Too?
No, Bambi 2. Oh, yeah. Bambi really 2.
You just heard a complete. It's like, I was trying to figure out, like, deers are organizing and be like, hey, guys, it's not cool that humans are killing us.
Guys, know what I'm going to do tomorrow? I'm going to take out one of their car. Front of them and stop them.
Disaster today as another deer bomber, suicide bomber, dove in front of a car.
It's like, oh, well, hey, man, I'm going to go eat their garden.
their campaign of harassment continues.
There's an asteroid heading towards Earth that's going to annihilate everything. What are we going to do?
There are different theories. One is, you know, you send up a nuke or whatever. It's like, okay. But the one I liked the most was have a cloud of satellites that can go to intercept and create a mass drive, which is you chip off a piece of rock and you throw it off to the side, and you keep doing that, and each one veers it off course. But what would we do if we heard that today? Probably die.
I mean, yeah. Or start a Patreon drive. You don't need your money anymore.
But guys, no. I mean, like, it's happening now. Like tomorrow.
Tomorrow? How big is the asteroid?
200 meters across.
Is that why my flight was canceled tonight?
That's pretty. Okay, 200 meters across. That's a couple of football fields. That seems big. That seems like it would make a big loud bang.
Expect to hit between Tokyo and Copenhagen in 24 days.
Man, Tokyo and Copenhagen. So wait,
hey, that put us. Is that Canada or us?
Yeah.
Which way?
Wait, Tokyo and Copenhagen means somewhere in Asia or Russia. Yeah.
Or anywhere between them. So for background, this is actually a drill being run right now by NASA and ESA going, hey, let's go through the scenario of, like, we listen to this awesome podcast called Weird Things. So they talk about this all the time. No, we need to do this. They're doing a scenario of, like, hey, what would we do? What's the plans? And they're doing a whole, you know, kind of conference exercise on a hypothetical impact.
Oh, that's great.
They have to make this does not describe, you know, a real one.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Big, it's not real.
Big red banner. Like, it's like, not enough, man. Make sure to also have just a giant overlay that says fake.
So this is all the information that they are running on. They have published the information that they are running on and exactly what the threat is, when it is scheduled to hit, all that.
How long do they have? Like in this scenario. Yeah, by the way to rip off our bit, put together a scenario and try to go through it.
Yeah, they have like, I think 24 days is what they're doing. So they're doing the conference, the IAEA Planetary Defense Conference. And actually something, I talked to somebody who'd participated in one of these before about the whole idea of, like, you know, it'd be kind of cool to, you know, do a documentary about this, you know. So if you type in planetary defense, you can find yourself on the page that Bryce just showed for us, and they show the whole exercise: day zero, day one, day two, day three, day four. They list out an asteroid is discovered March 26th at a magnitude 21.1, confirmed to be falling day, and like all the facts as they have, like what the monitoring systems are doing and whatnot. How would you keep track of it? How do you cooperate? What would you do? You know, you're trying to figure out more precisely where it's going to impact, what you need to do, et cetera.
As they work out those ideas, it occurs to me that there needs to be a person or set of persons who decide what the results are on various things that they need.
Yeah.
They have a dungeon master.
They do.
Like, basically, the dungeon master says, like, okay, you call Japan. They only have two rockets available, and they want $70 million
Neil deGrasse Tyson rolling dice somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's not effective. So I wonder if this is this a real-time exercise where they are getting new information laid out to them as it comes?
Yeah, I would imagine
just a big puzzle that they're trying to figure out together.
I would, from what it said, because it has a timeline, and if it's a multi-day conference, I would imagine that it is like a big game of D&D where it's like, okay, first thing, let's take action now. Let's mobilize this and that satellite, turn these two, cut off these projects.
Well, because I would imagine also that now it's like, all right, well, now you guys have to try to figure out where it's going, and you know, like they're trying to do stuff before we are able to ascertain exactly what it's doing and where it's going, and it's like they're matching their results up to other preset information.
Yeah, and I would imagine that, like, if on day one you say point this satellite at it and see what we can find out, you have to wait until day two to get those results,
figure it out, yeah.
And then find out, like, oh wait, no, that's not what we need at all. Let's do another one. And so it seems like this would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. They have, you know, part of what it is using our systems, the ESA systems, and all the different tools we have to figure out what they could tell us, because besides the satellites, you have ground-based telescopes, things like this. And I think it's a great exercise to see, like, what if this is going to happen? Who are we going to talk to? How do we organize? Let's run through this whole scenario. One of the things that happens all the time is, you know, like sometimes you drive by an airport and you'll see a bunch of fire trucks and people out there, and they're actually just surrounding an airplane, and they're just doing a practice drill of, like, what to do if there's a problem. And that's a great thing to do. And so here, hopefully it'll be very insightful, and they'll figure out, you know, like, you know, well, are we going to tell the people or not?
Yeah, I think in this scenario, the asteroid will possibly impact Earth in 8 years. On the day one part of the site, they've even made a fake press release about the possibility of a collision in the coming
exercise only. Years. Exercise only, yeah, it says on either ends of the corners.
This is awesome.
Oh, so this is a long-term campaign.
Well, I think maybe the conference is a week long, but...
Yeah, the conference is a week long, but yeah, I think that the goal is to say, you know, how would you confirm it? What would we do? What would be the steps to confirm it, whatever, strategically? I don't think there's any steps to like, and then this is how we're going to blow it up, but more like, yeah. Hey, how are the different groups going to work together to confirm it? How do we get as much information as we can early on?
Mm-hmm. It's a bit like a Model UN thing, like, imagine mm-hmm. hours or days, and it's like you have to make those phone calls and get those agreements and all that stuff.
That's cool. Glad to see they're doing that.
Yeah. So what's funny is I was just thinking, like, well, of course, the best thing is to have a defensive network of satellites ready to help out in this kind of situation, which makes me think as soon as we put more stuff in space, go SpaceX, which made me think of the fact that after we talked about it, SpaceX still has not talked at all about the explodey crew capsule.
They released a statement today.
Oh, they did. Oh, good.
Yeah. They're the head designer there. He's, you know, it's an ongoing investigation trying to figure out what they said. Yeah. They described it exploded. We're still trying to figure out what the heck happened. We know these are the conditions it happened. Like was before, you know, they're firing up like the Super Jacko thrusters. But other than that, they're going through the data, you know, trying to figure out what happened.
I guess just, you know, being on the outside every day that they don't have an announcement makes me a more nervous fan of this operation, because it would be implied that they're not talking because there are things they haven't figured out yet.
Well, yeah. And it's SpaceX, it's NASA. They're trying to do a comprehensive examination of this. It's not so much a rush to satisfy our curiosity as much as they need to understand very deeply, because if there's a fundamental problem there, then that's going to be an issue.
Keep in mind, I'm not saying they should hurry up. I'm saying I am getting sad, like, because the longer it takes, the less of a whoopsie doodle Joe left an errant hex nut in there.
Yeah, from what I understand, and this is all anecdotal, is that they had it on a test stand that was a vibrating test stand, and this was the capsule was already in the ocean, that it's saltwater corrosion, and they were vibrating this thing well beyond the limits of what they expected the thing to encounter, and then they went to go fire, and it went boom.
Got it.
Not a good outcome, but you know, it might be, well, that situation, something's never going to encounter in the real world, or do we? Don't know. So, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's the one thing that I do feel a little bit better is that this was a recovered from the water thing, which they don't want optimally to do. And if the reality is, all right, if it goes in the drink, then we got to build a new one.
Right.
Then, you know, that still leaves their main solution, which is that they want them to land on land.
Right.
Right. They want them to slowly re-enter onto a platform.
Well, I mean, these will probably just always land at sea, but they're just not going to be reused.
Yeah.
You know, they're just one and done. You know, it's some cool this week. I think, you know, we're getting the virtual reality device war is heating up.
Oh, yeah. Steam just released theirs, right? Or Valve's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Valve released their competitor to basically everybody else, which looks pretty formidable. Oculus announced updates to theirs, and also they formally the launch date for the Oculus Quest, which is their $400 standalone VR system that has full room sensing.
Ooh.
And the reviews of it are pretty good.
Yeah, I did watch one of those demos. It was pretty cool because you don't have any lighthouses. You can actually remember early on we talked about like what it would be like to be out in a field and just a bunch of people are running around because they're busy slaying dragons and stuff. The Oculus Quest, it in a rudimentary form, seems like it's the closest to that we've ever seen.
Yeah, we're watching some video of it here. What's cool about the Oculus Quest versus, and I've got this is the Daydream, which is, you know, it's pretty cool, but it has room sensing. This is the, this came out, you know, this was one of the big releases with the room sensing and stuff as I wiped the dust off of it. But the controller is sort of your kind of regular, just point and clicky kind of thing. It's not like a room sensing controller. But Oculus's version of this is supposed to, you know, their competitor to that's got a lot more, a bit more horsepower behind it, and the room sensing seems a lot more advanced, and the knuckle controllers seem way more sophisticated. And you're basically a lot like what the first generation Oculus was capable of, these can now do.
Yeah, and but the specifically, I think on the specs for the Valve new release, it seemed like it was roughly the same resolution. Had a wider field of vision. It had a simpler single cord, and of course the Knuckles controllers.
And it's compatible with the Vive technology. So if you have the lighthouses or those controllers, it'll still work with those.
So is this? This does not need to be hooked into a computer.
It does.
This is basically if your HTC Vive is a little bit long in the tooth. This is your upgrade.
Your new.
Yeah. Built-in headphones, all that stuff. Although the latest version of the Vive has had that too.
Is it wired or wireless?
It's wired. It's not headphones. They're actually speakers.
Oh, okay.
So they don't rest on your ears for extended comfort, I guess.
Got it. And I guess also for local outside VR awareness.
Yeah.
Although I like getting kind of lost all the way.
Yeah, I think that's a nice incremental sort of evolution to it. I read a report that was sort of funny. They criticized there's a dongle that allows you to take all the cords and go to one single, cord, but it's the one that plugs right into your computer. And so you still have all of the cords going out the back.
Yeah.
And it's not like the single tether to it, where I'm not a gamer. And so I'm excited about just put the thing on. It's not hooked up to anything and you're free. And I think that's where, I think the future is going to be for a lot of people will be just that.
Oh yeah. And considering for my taste as a believer in the HTC Vive, the high end of that industry has yet to really pay out. I've yet to have the fully immersive RPG experience that I kind of would have hoped for. The best stuff that that has come out of it is stuff that is lower fi. Like you can do the Star Trek Bridge Commander
Beat Saber,
Beat Saber, all that you can do on the Oculus, and they're advertising it with these games that I think are the most fun, which is I think somewhat disappointing for all the equipment and money that you put into the wired solution that has a better graphics engine, because it's be it a failure of development or money or just the market not being there, I've yet to dive into a 3-4 hour game that really held my attention for 3-4 hours because it was unfolding in a cool and interesting way. So we'll see.
Gentlemen, what are your picks?
Indeed. I got a bit of a process pick here because I've been on the road and had to kind of decamp and do everything from my laptop instead of my rig at home. And I got to say, part of the Adobe suite, Adobe Audition, I've been using it a lot more, and I have found it to be very, very, very robust. It is something that I kind of shied away from because everything that we'd done, I think it's safe to say that our tribe of podcasters is very live to tape, everything going into whatever the dumbest possible, easiest, least screw-upable possible recording solution that we can possibly have. And so I've stayed away from it because that is our coven. This is how we live. This is how we make our money. But I got to say, it's been really great learning it and using it. And I feel like the shows have taken less of a hit and require less physical setup on the road than they would have if I was running it into a little mixer and playing all of my sound effects off an iPad and stuff like that. So
were you doing editing beforehand? Or was that all just Audacity?
If there was editing, it was trimming off the beginning and the end a little bit, and maybe if there was something in the middle, I could snip it out, but it was all into Audacity, and now it is into Audition, and I'm just excited to continue to dig into it. But it runs fast on my MacBook. It exports really easily. I'm able to do effects and just sweeten the audio just that little bit to make it a little bit more professional, which when you're on the road, that's the stuff that suffers is just those little things. And I've been able to keep it high quality thanks to Adobe Audition.
I got that because I had the full plan. And the other day I was just said, I need to do something. I'll just go do this in GarageBand. And I opened up GarageBand and I'm like, I'm going to add a sound effect. Did I add it? I don't know. I can't tell from this new version if I've done this or not or how many of layers I've got. I'm like, screw it. I'm going to go use Adobe Audition. which should be the exact opposite effect that GarageBand has.
100%. I used to be a believer in GarageBand. That was like where I edited, especially in the early days. I edited all the podcasts that I did in GarageBand, and it's, I don't know what the hell's going on with GarageBand. I had the exact same experience that you had, Andrew, and that
are they pulling a Final Cut X?
You know,
well, it's always been casual, right?
Well, no, it's not even casual. To me, it's more complicated than casual now because they've added a few more things for music, and they want to gear it more toward music. So in terms of audio podcast stuff, it's just a little bit too kludgy to be super easy.
Yeah.
And now, because I'm also working on a PC sometimes and a Mac sometimes, Adobe Audition allows me to export all those files, and now I can just take the file that I used on my PC and put it right on my Mac. Hmm. It's pretty easy.
Yeah, I open up GarageBand. I'm like, I don't know. I have a file here. I think I applied effect. How many effects are, I don't know. I'm like, I'm like, if I'm going to bother digging into this, let's go back to Audition.
Yeah.
And that's a big fail. A big fail that the easiest to use application is harder to use than a pro application.
I need to learn Audition. I use Premiere even for like Trending Lemon, which is an audio only podcast. I edit that in Premiere.
Oh, really?
Just because I use Premiere all the time for all the video stuff, and so I'm much more used to.
It's easy.
Yeah,
You'll catch on pretty quick.
Yeah.
So somebody made a recommendation to me, and I got the audiobook, and so far I'm really digging it. It's a shortish one, like maybe 7.5 hours, but it's called Rock Breaks Scissors, A Practical Guide to Outguessing and Outwitting Almost Everybody. And it begins with the construction of a guessing machine, basically a machine that just watches you predict a coin flip, and it pays attention to how often you go, you know, three heads in a row, and then you get nervous, and then you switch to the other. And this is back in, like, I want to say the 1960s. I think it was, I forget whether it's Bell Labs or IBM or whatever. But pretty quick, this thing had a statistically significant advantage because humans, we have those biases that we move in predictable ways, even when we're trying to be unpredictable. And I'm really enjoying it. It's a good book by William Poundstone.
And William Poundstone used to write, like, The Bigger Secrets Revealed and all that, and all that other series. Remember him?
No, I don't know. Bigger Secrets Revealed?
Yeah, Revealed. Look at the William Poundstone. Look at the other books he's written, and you'll see a
How Would You Move, Mount Fuji, The Myth of Fair Value,
Prisoner's Dilemma. How Would You Move, Mount Fuji? Are You Smart Enough to Work at Google? Doomsday Calculation? Gave me the vote.
Yeah, no, these all look great. Well, hopefully if I enjoy this one, I'll keep diving in.
Big Book of Secrets. That was his big, huge one back in the 90s.
Oh, interesting. Right on.
Only a quarter
was, like,
for the hardcover.
Made it into the remainders, like, of all of, like, the bookstores and stuff. But, yeah, so cool. Prolific writer. Excellent.
Yeah. I have a pick. This is a short pick. I actually recommended it on Chord Killers.
Oh, my God.
This week.
Highest backing up your play on this one.
This is a new Netflix sketch comedy show. Netflix hasn't done too many sketch comedy shows, and this is their newest. It's I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson. And I think the one word I would use to describe the type of comedy would be aggressive, maybe?
I would say they're one-note sketches that waste no time on preamble. They get in and they get out, and they're great.
Yeah, they're very fast. It's also like the third Netflix series like this month that's come out that is a 15-minute format instead of 30 minutes or an hour or something. And I think it's the best of all of those. But it's very funny. Akiva Shiver from Lonely Island is directing it. He also directed the Michael Bolton Comedy Bang Bang special.
Yeah, Michael Bolton's Big Sexy Valentine's Day special.
Yeah. It's very funny, and it's a very, like, low buy-in because it's only like 7 15-minute episodes.
Well, and plus also, you know how some TV shows people are like, oh, just get through episode 4 or whatever. It's like, no, this one, give it 3 minutes on the first episode.
Sure, the first sketch is very
good. Yeah, I've seen 2.5 sketches, and I would describe the comedy as you get the premise immediately. Sometimes in the first sentence or like 2 sentences, and then either it is an escalation or an exploration of the joke, but it is kamikaze. Like it goes and escalates and escalates and escalates and then just explodes, and then you're on to the next one. So it was very, very, very funny. I would compare it. Oh man, I don't even know what I would.
It does feel a lot like the Michael Bolton special.
Yeah,
really like that.
And it's a little Tim and Eric-y with how it extrapolates on all of the situations. You know, I think it was in some interview where they were kind of talking about the type of humor, and it's a lot of like embarrassing yourself in public and then doubling down to like try to save face. Mm-hmm. Right, like, oh no, I'm not wrong. This is a pool door.
Yeah, but that's you know, it's kind of like that's more like the Judd Apatow or Will Ferrell like kind of like, okay, well, I'm wrong, but I'm gonna be arrogant, right?
Sure.
Like I'm going to embarrass my way out of this.
Yeah,
there's a great sketch. And it's not quite as absurd as Tim and Eric, where like right. Tim and Eric would often get very abstract. It's like, oh, here's a thing. Well, here's a cat that is like eating another cat, and right. and let's talk about that for or let's say a nonsense word over and over again. Mm-hmm. This is like it's grounded in reality, and then just goes yeah. into very weird places. At least in the 2.5 sketches I saw,
except for one very specific sketch about Scrooge having to save the future.
Okay.
I'm super bummed to watch it because I love sketch comedy, and everything I saw, at least at the beginning, is good. And also, it's like, hey, look, it doesn't, you know, as William Shakespeare said, don't waste my time. it's quick.
Yeah. So it's I think you should leave.
I watched those little like Netflix autoplay previews, which I hate with every fiber of my existence, particularly because it's like. Sometimes I just want to leave the TV on and scroll through there, and you don't want to have like things just autoplay and sound at you.
Is there a way to turn that off, or is that?
No,
I don't open the Netflix app as much because of it, because I'm like, I don't want that. But that gripe aside, I watched the little preview. I'm like, well, this doesn't look funny at all.
It's not a good trailer. You know? Netflix makes bad trailers, y'all.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah. So I'm glad to hear. Glad to hear that. My pick is I've been listening to this book again. It's by Chris Anderson. It came out like 10 years ago, whatever. Some of it's out of date, but a lot of it's still interesting. Kind of getting the economics, and that is Free by Chris Anderson.
Oh, that was a good one. Yeah, I liked it quite a bit.
And it's interesting to talk about some companies that maybe aren't around or their models didn't work out, but he does get into the economics of like, you know, that we are in this era of like, you know, some of the biggest things we have out there now, you know, Facebook is a quote free service. Google is giant and it's free, you know. Snap is there and free, and YouTube is free, you know, and just the rise of these companies that provide these free things and how it's just gone so beyond the models from before. So it's worth listening to or reading again.
I mean, that's I feel like we're now an appropriate time away from that book's release that I feel like I would put that in the like if you want to understand like a moment in time, like that book was well talked about when it was released, and I think you're right. If you look at like what has happened past then, like there's all these free products, right? Like that have dominated the landscape.
Yeah, I mean there was a time when there was a debate like, oh, is Facebook going to start charging? Are they going to start charging? You know, that was, and now of course not, because they need everybody using it. But there was a time when you're like, oh, and this makes a very good argument of like why they wouldn't or why it wouldn't make sense. So anyhow, that's my pick. It's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.